So today we're reading from, continuing in the seventh canto, chapter 6, and we're going to read some translations first, and then we'll end with verse 25 and read the full purport for that verse. So start with 17.
Just 1 second, he's getting the verses up.
Okay. So as you recall, this is continuation of Prahlad Maharaj speaking to his schoolmates. And it's quite remarkable to think about these little boys that are hearing from this exalted devotee and really taking it to heart. And Prahlad Maharaj is also in the body of a small boy, 5 years old, but is speaking so eloquently. Can you imagine this, like speaking this kind of Sanskrit verses like that, and just flowing and this philosophy. So let's see what he has to say. So we can take turns. You can read, whoever wants can read the different verses till 25. But I would like to pause briefly after the first translation.
My dear friends, the sons of the demons, it is said that no one bereft knowledge of the Supreme Personality of God has been able to liberate himself from material bondage at any time or in any country. Rather, those bereft of knowledge of the Lord are bound by the material laws. They are factually addicted to sense gratification, and their target is women. Indeed, they are actually playthings in the hands of attractive women. Victimized by such a conception of life, they become surrounded by general gratitude and great gratitude, and thus they are shackled to the material bondage. Those who are very much addicted to this conception of life are called demons. Therefore, although you are sons of demons, keep aloof from such versions and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of God, Narayan, the origin of all demigods. Because the ultimate goal for the devotee to Narayan is liberation of the bondage of material existence.
So Srila Prabhupada here says they're called demons because they're addicted to this conception of life. And he's actually referring to his friends in this verse as daitya. So, oh my friends, sons of the demons, right? And it wasn't considered a necessarily a negative term, just a descriptive term, like they're part of that that group of people, the sons of the demons. So, and they're very powerful, very, you could say more advanced than we are today in Kali Yuga, right? So these people. So I want to mention one thing about this verse, because he's saying here, he's speaking to, keep in mind his audience. So he's speaking to his young friends, but they're in the bodies of young boys, and he's speaking to them and saying that, for his audience, that if you're not careful, then you can become entangled in sense gratification, which manifests in the form of women. And he's talking to this particular audience who are men or boys. So, and then he says, indeed, they are actually playthings in the hands of attractive women. And actually in the Sanskrit, the term for women in this particular context is lusty women, so materially conditioned women, right? So I just wanted to make sure that distinction was made, because it's not just women in general, but that is specifically an attraction to materially minded or lusty women. And the same could be said, like if we're speaking to a different kind of audience, it could be said about any attraction to a person when it's done from that mood of wanting to enjoy with a person on the material body. And because I had just read this beautiful quote with Srila Prabhupada in the back, it's on the back of the book, Bond of Love, with Srila Prabhupada's Vaishnavi disciples have told their stories, the women disciples. So in the back of that book, there's a quote from Srila Prabhupada that says that if you would associate with these devotees, then you can go back to Godhead, these women devotees. So distinguishing when we read these verses that talk about women, I just wanted to point that out, because sometimes as those of us who are in women bodies, it can feel like, oh, you know, that somehow we're the source of fall down or something. So I wanted to to clarify that. So now text 19.
Just a quick note on the Sanskrit for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it could also mean kama as lust. Visham could also mean vision. So lust is vision, actually.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. Yes, that's helpful.
Like the object of the senses, but also how one looks at them.
Right. Yeah, so it can be however that, whatever that is for a particular person. And Prabhupada often weaves in commentary into his translations. So you can see he's expanding on this idea of, there is the Sanskrit word playboy, which is krida mriga. And I don't know Sanskrit well. So that's what Prabhupada's commenting on, becoming playthings to whatever our object of gratification is. So, yeah. So text 19.
And your sons and demons, the Supreme Krishna Vaidya Narayan, is the original Supreme Soul, the Father of all living entities. Consequently, there are no impediments to pleasing him or worshipping him under any conditions, whether one be a child or an old man. The relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a fact, and therefore there is no difficulty in pleasing the Lord.
Yeah, you can continue.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, who is infallible and indefatigable, is present in different forms of life, from the non-living beings, Tavara, such as the plants, to Brahma, the foremost created living being. It's also present in the varieties of natural creations and the natural elements, the total natural energy, and the modes of natural nature, Sattvaguna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna, as well as the unmanifested natural nature and the false ego. Although his one is present everywhere, and he is also the transcendental super soul, the cause of all causes, who is present as the observer in the course of the hearts of all living entities. He is indicated as that which is pervaded and as an all-pervading super soul, but actually he cannot be indicated. He is changeless and undivided. He is simply perceived as the supreme Satchidananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Being covered by the curtain of external energy through the atheist, he appears non-existent.
Okay, next verse.
Therefore, my dear young friends, born in demons, please act in such a way that the Supreme Lord, who is beyond the conception of this real knowledge, will be satisfied. Give up your demoniac nature and act without enmity or duality. Show mercy to all living beings by enlightenment and devotional service, thus speaking knowledge.
And then we can read the translation, and then we'll go back to the Sanskrit for this last verse here.
It is unobtainable for devotees who have satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes, the original source of everything. The Lord is the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities. For devotees, therefore, who are transcendental with what is the use of following the principles of religion, economic development, sense gratification and liberation, which are all automatically obtainable under the influence of the modes of nature. We devotees always glorify the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore we need not ask for anything in terms of dharma, karma, artha, and emotion.
So two times in that verse he mentions, Prabhupada's translating the English, religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. And then at the end of the translation, he's saying them in their Sanskrit words, dharma, kama, artha, and moksha. So that's going to be the kind of what we're going to be focusing on. So keep that in mind. Does anybody know what four of those together are called?
Purusharsa.
Yes, yeah, Purusharsa. So there's a devotee who has that name. So. Now you'll know what it means. So those are the four branches or the four aspects of what Vedic life was about, you know, like the process of gradually bringing us to liberation. So let's sing the verse here. Tushte cha tatra kimalabhya mananta adye.
Tushte cha tatra kimalabhya mananta adye.
Kim tayar guna vyati karadi haye svasidha.
Kim tayar guna vyati karadi haye svasidha.
Dharma daya kim agunena chakangshitena.
Dharma daya kim agunena chakangshitena.
Saram jursam charanayor upagayatam na.
Saram jursam charanayor upagayatam na.
And if a devotee would like to read the translation again, or you can read it all together, actually.
What is the use of calling the these devotees all glorify the Lotus Feet of the Lord, and therefore we need our last.
So this is, yeah, so let's have someone read one of the paragraphs, and then another devotee can read another paragraph with a purport.
In advanced civilization, people are eager to be religious, to be economically well situated, to satisfy their senses to the fullest extent, and at last to obtain liberation. However, these are not to be magnified as desirable. Indeed, for a devotee, these are all very easily available. Bildamanda Thakur said, Mukti swayam puritayam janisyavate swadharmakamakrayasmayadarshya. The person always stands at the door of the devotee, ready to carry out his orders. Material advancement in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation simply wait to serve a devotee at the first opportunity. A devotee is already in a transcendental position. He does not need further qualifications to be liberated. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:26, a devotee is transcendental to the actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature because he is situated on the problem platform.
The Lord Maharaj said, Agunena Chakamshitena. If one is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the lotus feet of the Lord, he does not need anything in terms of dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. In Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, in the beginning of the transcendental literature, it is said dharma prajita kaitavotra. Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are kaitava, false and unnecessary. Yagmat saranam. Persons who are completely transcendental to the material activities of separateness, who make no distinction between mine and yours, but who simply engage in the devotional service of the Lord are actually fit to accept Bhagavad Dharma, Dharma, and Bhagavatamya. Because they are nirmatsara, not jealous of anyone, they want to make others devotees, even their enemies. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya remarks, Kakshate mokshagam api shakam nakam satoryata. Devotees are not desirous of any material happiness, including the happiness derived from liberation. This is called anya vilashita shunyam jnana karma vyavahar kutam. Karmis desire material happiness and jnanis desire liberation, but a devotee does not desire anything. He is simply satisfied by rendering transcendental loving service at the lotus feet of the Lord and glorifying him everywhere by preaching, which is his life and soul.
So om gyana tibirandasya gyana nishvakaya chatur nirgam tasmai shri guru namaha. So what a beautiful verse, and this is culminating in bhakti, right? You can see Prahlad Maharaj is describing how these four principles of religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation are automatically obtained in this world. But for devotees who are always glorifying the Lord, they don't need to ask for those things, right? So And those things together are called purushartha, those four different goals, you could say, of human life. I would like to share a little story that Thomas, does anybody here, who here knows Professor Thomas Hopkins? Okay, so a couple of people have heard his name. So he was one of the first American scholars to recognize Prabhupada as a genuine representative of Vaishnavism. And he's still alive today. He's a really wonderful person, retired professor. And he met Prabhupada in ISKCON's first temple in New York, so 26 Second Avenue. And later on first just a little bit about Thomas Hopkins. So he's, if you look in the Bhagavad Gita, he's one of the quotes, recommendations. He's the very first one. It says critics praise Bhagavad Gita, right? So he's listed at least in this edition as the first comment here. So he says, he wrote, "There is little question that this edition is one of the best books available on the Gita and on devotion. Prabhupada's translation is an ideal blend of literal accuracy and religious insight." So his words are forever immortalized in the beginning of this book as a recommendation. So what a wonderful service he did. And he wrote an article more recently called "Why ISKCON Should Study Its Own History." And in that article, he was basically appealing to the devotees of ISKCON to record and to understand and also express their, histiographically, the early days of a spiritual movement, to really capture those, the history of it. Because he wrote that ISKCON is now in a position to undertake such an effort and needs to do so while Prabhupada's influence is still so powerful in living memory, the memory of his disciples, right? They're the ones who met Prabhupada. So he was mentioning in this article how the three major religions, Buddhism, Christianity, and Islam, made serious and contemporary efforts to preserve their early traditions, thus creating the possibility of critically assessing at any point in history the extent to which they had stayed on or strayed from their original path and mandate. So by collecting the histories and having those available to future generations, what it does is it sets kind of this barometer of our progress. Like, are we repeating past mistakes? And what could we do? Like, what did they do back then when those mistakes happened like that? There's last summer, actually, these Vaishnavi devotees, Pranada Prabhu and others, they had collected this whole anthology of the history of early days of women's experience in ISKCON. And they compiled it into a book titled The Emergence of Women's Voices in ISKCON. So that was an example of one kind of compiling of history and of experiences and other philosophical articles as well. And there's been even some scholars like Thomas Hopkins and others who have compiled histories of our movement and other devotees as well, who have done it for like their PhD dissertations and so on. So I was thinking about like even the Krishna House, right? Or the history of Krishna House. Like, this would be a wonderful project if anybody's inspired to perhaps collect the stories, or maybe it could even be a documentary of, while these devotees are still alive, the ones who gave so much of their life to starting Krishna Lunch and building the Krishna House and the different, when it was in different locations, and getting the stories of the devotees who were involved, like the devotees who purchased the Krishna House, and like hearing the whole story. It'd be such an amazing to have that captured. So if anybody in the audience is, this is just a little plug, if anybody's inspired in that way, feel free to contact me and maybe we can brainstorm ideas about how to do that and maybe pull in other devotees who might be helpful resources to do that. That'd be nice to capture that history of Krishna House. So that's just a side note to to tell you who Thomas Hopkins is. And he met Prabhupada in 1975 in Philadelphia. So at the time when he met Prabhupada, he asked him, if you had to say to someone who was going to collect one small section of your work, what would you want them to collect? And what he meant by this question is he basically wanted a short explanation of Prabhupada's essential messages in his writings, right? So he's asking, what's the key of the teachings? Prabhupada replied, that is stated in a few verses, and you can find out this. He pointed to a disciple. He said, you can find out this dharmasya pavargasya. So remember, that was mentioned in our verse today in the purport, that it's another Bhagavatam verse. This particular verse is Srimad Bhagavatam 129. So it's at the very beginning of Bhagavatam. And it's the verse that says, so Prabhupada quoted the verse to Thomas Hopkins in this conversation. He said, all occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. One who has engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. So in that verse also, it's saying how those kama, artha, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, what they're used for in the Vedic context of these four words is that, and they kind of lead into each other. So religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. So he's telling Thomas Hopkins that in the Vedic tradition, by performing religious duties, then we get economic development, like money, by carefully following what our dharma is, our occupation and religion. Then we get the finances that we need to then enjoy this world, but all done through religious scripture, like following what needs to be done in a very spiritual context. So, and that leads to happiness, and then that eventually allows us to try for spiritual liberation. That's in the, you could say, in the days of yore, like Prahlad Maharaj is talking about, those days when people were living Varnashram Dharma, everything was done according to my dharma, like what I'm, you know, I'm acting according to my nature, and I'm doing that for religious by religious guidelines and all that. But then Prabhupada says that to Thomas Hopkins in this conversation, that the real, what Bhagavatam is saying is that it's promoting a religion that is aiming not just for, not at material prosperity, but for something way beyond that. And the verse goes on to say that if your religious practices provide you with money, that money shouldn't be used for sense gratification. So ultimately, Prabhupada is telling him that bhakti, love and devotion of Krishna, is far superior. And that's what the Bhagavatam is all about. So he's telling Thomas Hopkins, this is the essence of the teachings. And it's the same in today's verse with Prahlad Maharaj, right? So the four things, religion or occupation. So dharma can be translated as either one. And this particular verse, Prabhupada is translating it as religion. And economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. In the context of the culture in which Prahlad Maharaj is speaking, these are done in a very formulaic way, very regulated way in Varnashram. And we're not even today, here we are in Kali Yuga, we're not even at the level of that kind of regulated life. So you could say, if you had like two options back in the Vedic days, like you can either go right to practicing bhakti yoga, or you can follow this gradual process of, you know, regulative principle, religious activities, a lot of ritual leading to gradually to liberation. Today, you could say we don't even have those two options, because we're in Kali Yuga, we are all considered Shudras or lower, right? There's that that phrase from the Skanda Purana, that Kalo Shudra Sambhava, right? We're all at the most Shudra level, but or even lower in this world and at this time. So for us to ask, oh, which one would be better? Should I do this gradual process, or should I, take what Prahlad Maharaj is saying here and just kind of focus just on serving Krishna and all the rest will follow? Which one should I do? That's not even a question that's relevant to us at this current life, in this current world that we live in. It's kind of like, you know how they say a moot question, like an irrelevant question, a moot point. So for us in this current context, really what we have is we do have two options. One of them is to take shelter of this magnanimous Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, or it's to kind of just flounder around in this world trying to maybe follow these four things, but at our Kali Yuga version of them, which is never going to be successful. So you could say they're almost like the shadow version of what they were at one point in the Vedic times. So, and you can see we're, you know, in this world where people are striving after these things for various reasons, particularly sense enjoyment. That's the big one, right? The sense enjoyment separate even from religious principles, but just completely like enjoying at the animal level. Like whenever I feel an urge, just go after it. And that's kama and Kali Yuga, right? Unregulated and just impulse driven. And the other ones too, like religion, there are, you know, wonderful religious organizations where people do get to that level of bhakti. But for the most part, religion, when it's done from a sort of a business deal transaction with God, then it's still so far from that goal of unalloyed devotion, right? So when it's like, okay, God, I'm going to put this in the bank and I expect this much back in interest, you know? Kind of like they had a play, a drama. I was trying to find it and I couldn't find it on Google, but there was this old ISKCON drama play that they used to do these short skits. And one of them was something like a guy singing, Jai Jagadisha Hari, give me a house by the sea. And it was like some kind of a little skit about basically praying to Krishna, but hoping for the results. And I think this is common in all cultures. And it's maybe not always so direct. Of course, people are not necessarily like, oh, give me something back. It can be more subtle, like turning to religion because afraid of things. So if I turn to religion, then God will protect me, whatever, right? So these are all pious, and it's not too, I'm not dismissing these efforts. Obviously, they're wonderful. Anytime we turn to a God, it's wonderful. Yet Prahlad Maharaj is saying that all of these things they don't need to be in the radar of a devotee because they automatically follow. So, and liberation too, actually. Liberation oftentimes in our contemporary world, if we think about like the Western world, like what came to mind for me was I spent some time in the kind of yoga world, involved with an Ayurvedic center. And so there were, I came in contact with a lot of people who were in that yoga world. And which is also, again, a pious endeavor, mode of goodness often. And yet so often I saw this kind of talk about sort of like a transcendent view of liberation in freedom from the pains of this world. So hoping to kind of just almost like a disconnect from reality and just kind of merge and just enjoy that feeling of, you know, that really, that feeling that the mode of goodness can bring. It's tempting. It can feel really good, especially when you're talking about merging with God. You know, that's such a temptation because it's, you don't have to face your own ego, your own, you know, it's just more comfortable because we all want to be God here in this world. So to just go, okay, yeah, we're all one, it's all okay. That's very comfortable and easy for the ego in this world. So we can see efforts to sort of do all of these things in Kali Yuga. And yet to keep in mind that even those efforts, they'll never lead to what Prahlad Maharaj is talking about. He's talking about gradual process of the Vedic times of these dharma, kama, arta, and moksha, gradually through regulated life leading to liberation. So let's just think, okay, well, we're not really at that level. So what's the other option? So the other option, fortunately, we're so fortunate because we have this amazing option of Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement, right? And it's like, imagine, who here has been to the ocean? Okay, so I would say most people, right? Most people raise their hand. So if you can picture yourself, just think for a moment. Perhaps just close your eyes for a moment, actually, and just picture yourself at the ocean in the waves, like perhaps you're way out in the ocean and see the dark blue water and you can't feel your feet. You're out in the deeper parts where you can't feel your feet on the ground. You're just floating in the ocean. And suddenly the current and the waves start picking up. Perhaps a storm is developing and you can feel that helpless feeling. You're bobbing out in the middle of this ocean and all of a sudden you're swept out even further, deeper, and you can't see the shoreline anymore. And you can imagine just feeling that for a second, that sort of panic that might happen when you're out in this ocean, right? So you can open your eyes, but just to get like a little visual of that helpless feeling of being stranded out in the deep, in the depths of the ocean, which is so powerful, way more powerful than any one of us, right? So think about that and then think, here we are in this world and that is our situation. We are drowning in this material energy, thinking that we're going to find enjoyment. We're like drowning. And every time our head bobs up, we're like, oh, some air. Yay. I'm enjoying. Right. But we're struggling and like an endless cycle of repeated births and deaths, trying so hard to find enjoyment by just like gasping for air. Yay. I enjoyed. And then struggling again. And just adrift in this world. I just like visuals. So I was thinking of this ocean example, right? So now we think about how there's this transcendental ship with Lord Chaitanya, the whole Sankirtan movement, right? This transcendental ship just gliding right through that ocean and with no effort at all. The storm, the turbulence of this Kali Yuga, this world, are not affecting the ship at all. It's just, you can imagine, like, this would make an amazing short movie. You know how they have these like short Pixar clips or something, right? Like, it would make this incredible point that there's this shining golden, you can imagine the ship coming, right? Transcendental ship with this knowledge to help the conditioned souls out of this dark, these waves of just struggling in this world. And you can just to extend the analogy a little more, you can imagine this is a ship that has and unlimited resources for rescuing, right? Because today in our world, like if there was a rescue ship, eventually they would run out of like, you know, vests, like life vests or something, or little rafts, you know, like the Titanic, it ran out of amenities to save people. But here's this unlimited forever, for time immemorial, unlimited efforts of this Sankirtan movement of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, throwing out these ropes, these life vests, like, come on, grab it, take it. And Prabhupada mentions that the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, the devotees of Krishna, are not jealous. They want everyone to come on board, join us in this wonderful world where we remember who we really are as servants of Krishna and our real joy, the real essence of us, and forever bliss, you know, freedom of that suffering of struggling in this world in the waves, trying to find happiness. So, and I think there was a devotee, I couldn't find this also, but there's a painting that I've seen before where Prabhupada is at the front of that ship, and I believe it's a BBT painting, Prabhupada standing at the front as the captain. For us, he's the captain of that ship, and he's the one who has who is, you know, encouraging all of his devotees, disciples to go out and it's, you know, in future generations forever, our grand disciples and so on, like all of us, to make efforts to reach out to living entities who are struggling in this world. It's like when there's a fire, right? Hopefully none of you have experienced this, but I think we can all picture what that would be like, being in a house that's suddenly on fire, and then we turn over and we see our roommate is just like completely oblivious and sleeping and just like maybe smiling in their dreams, you know, like and totally enjoying their sleep. And we know the urgency, like we're not going to just go, okay, they're there and put the blanket higher on their, you know, we're going to be like, hey, come on, wake up. And of course, you applying this tactfully, people, because we're so seeped in ego and we're so identifying with this world, we often need to be treated with a bit of, like sometimes people don't react well when you just go, come on, take it, you know? So we have to apply this very, we have to apply this intelligently, right? So how can we best awaken people to knowledge, right? And that will look different for our different audiences, of course. But the example is there of Bhaktisiddhanta said that, like that example about the fire, and you're gonna wake up that person. You're not gonna just let them sleep and just go, okay, I'm gonna rescue myself. And imagine how we'd feel like afterwards. That would always weigh on us, right? That we didn't do as much as possible to help people come to realize the real joy of life, the real essence of who we are. So that's the blissful reality that Prahlad Maharaj is talking about. And it's so encouraging that we don't need to worry about trying to follow all these rules and regulations of the Vedic times of, you know, and trying to do all these things, but we can just use whatever we have for Krishna and really our natures for Krishna. And then at the same time, as we fill our cups, we will want that overflow. We will want to do as much as possible in our own way. We're each of us are individuals. We have our own nature. In our own way, we will want to share that with the people in our lives, and praying to Krishna for the ability to do that in a way that will really touch the hearts of others, so that they will want to climb on board the ship too. You know, there's that also that analogy that this is a huge ocean of material world, but as soon as we take shelter of this process, it becomes like, what does it become like?
Water contained in the hoop of a car.
Yeah. So I'm sure that most of you have probably been to Adhikarti Prabhu's farm. So you can picture like a little tiny, you know, in the mud, little hoof print. It becomes so easy. We don't have to try so hard. And we're just automatically lifted up into this wonderful ship of Krishna consciousness. And then when we're in there, it's not like we just go, okay, yay, I'm back. That's it. That's all about me. But we're continually, the mood of the Sankirtan movement is to continuously look out. You know, you can imagine on the ship, like, oh, there's a soul and let's go rescue, right? So it's a rescue mission. And that's hopefully that analogy will be inspirational for us and in our, you know, even at the Krishna lunch endeavor. So yeah, I'll end here and see if there's any comments or questions.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Prabhas. My question would be how to balance, I guess, our desire to help others and balancing that with our own sadhana, I guess, and also kind of accepting, like the life bargaining. Can you teach us, like, if someone is going to pull you down with them, sometimes the best option is to maintain yourself, and then when they're kind of petered out, then we can go back in. Help them, but it's not helpful for them if you go down with them. So how would you kind of like advise us to balance these elements?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't catch the first part as much. I heard the second part about how do we not get pulled down with someone else. So I'll just address that first. In this kind of metaphor that we talked about with the ocean, like, yes, it's, can you imagine you're going out like lifeguards, they have to learn techniques for how to rescue someone without being dragged down as well, right? Because that's a big thing, like people are scrambling and are just like pulling you down. And of course we know the association, the power of association. So yes, when we are reaching out to share Krishna consciousness with others, we do have to be careful. And we can learn techniques for this. One of the most helpful things is to remember that it's not me that's going to go help others, right? I'm just an instrument, and I'm the whole parampara. So you can almost picture this whole, like this ship, right? And this whole parampara, they're all behind us. So as long as we stay very close to our spiritual mentors, our teachers, Srila Prabhupada, right? As long as we stay very tight with them, then we won't have to worry about being dragged down by the, you could say, the drowning person, right? So because we're staying linked to them. And that's the process of Krishna consciousness, is that you become stronger when you're linked to those who are immersed in it, right? So if we can create that link, oh, it's like this example that Radha Swami gave once of, there was an actual situation, I think in Puri, where there was a devotee who was drowning, had been swept out into the ocean. And Radha Swami was giving this, he was telling this story, and he said that the devotees who were there, it was a yatra, I guess many devotees were there, they immediately created a link chain, right? Like where people hold each other's hands and starting on the beach and then gradually extending it out into the water. So they're on solid land and they're, but each person is linked to the other people. And so together they had the strength to save this devotee's life. And this was an actual thing that happened. And Radha Swami was talking in the context of how important holding on to the association of devotees is in order to help ourselves and to help others, right? Mm-hmm. So that comes to mind immediately. I didn't hear the first part, so I'm sorry I couldn't answer that part.
No, that covered it. Thank you so much.
Okay.
So another practical experience that we had was we were at the beach. This was the Krishna house trip. And we were swimming, and then the same thing happened to our Nitai Prashad. So Nitai was like swimming, but he was not swimming. Thinking it was okay, but then the waves lifted him up, and he got in one of those riptides that pulled him out. And then the girls, we were swimming like nearby, and then somebody told me to look over my shoulder there, and I saw that he was like flailing there, basically like drowning. And then I went over and I held his arm and I was trying to swim to drag him in, but the undertow was too strong. So after a while of struggling, I was getting tired and I was thinking, I'm like, we're not going to make it like this. You know, I'm not strong enough to pull him in. And so I told him, Nita, I'm going to go and get somebody who can actually help you. And then that was really hard because he was like holding on to me and I was just like, waiting up to make it less But then I swam on some other, I saw a man that there that was having like one of those paddle board things, you know, they stand on and sort of paddle along. And I swam to where I could, he was a little far away. I had to like swim and shout. And I pointed out, he's like, okay. So he came over and then he managed to get me tied on the board and bring him in. So I was thinking, like, yeah, that sometimes, like Max was saying, that we may not be strong enough to save, you know, we may feel like we're getting pulled down by the person, and that then we need to find someone who's stronger than us in Krishna consciousness, and then that person may be safe. But our role is very important, because although we may be weak, but we may be able to connect them with someone who can save them.
Oh, thank you. That's, wow, I'm really glad that that story has a happy ending as well.
And it's his birthday today.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's wonderful. And that's such a good point, that sometimes when we know, we if we are really introspective and know our own limitations, and we're very honest about where we are on the path, we might be aware that I'm not strong enough to do this. I might not be the person. I might not be the best person for this person to speak with about their doubts or about their struggles, right? So let me redirect, like you said, to let me find someone who is a really powerful, you could say like a powerful swimmer or whatever, you know, the analogy, but yeah, someone who can shelter them. So that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful morning, and happy birthday, Nitai.